Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, everybody. This is Barney Leventino. Welcome to the latest chapter of Turn the Page. And I'm happy today to be speaking with Rav Friedel, Syosset resident who has an interesting story to tell. And we're going to learn a little bit about what Rav's been up to for the last several months, and actually several years since he moved into the area. Welcome, Rav.
Thank you. Good to see you, Barney. I've been the steward of the Skank family house on Convent Road for the last 20 years. I spent half my time in Montauk, half my time here in Syosset, and the property is beyond compare here in Syosset. And doing research over the course of the 20 years that I've lived there, we've discovered that the house was built in the 1680s. We were able to get it on the National Register of Historic Places. It's already on the Town of Oyster Bay's register. And we had to relocate the barn that was built in the 1880s, 1890s, to the property proper when we first bought it, because we didn't have the money to buy that piece of land that it was on.
When you say you moved into Syosset, you really moved into Syosset. You stepped back in time. For those who are not familiar, the Skank family were one of the earliest European families to settle in the area. And as Rav mentioned, they moved into the area in the 1600s. And it is generally accepted that his home is indeed the oldest residential structure in the area, and we're just very, very happy that it came into the hands of somebody who can appreciate the historical value and who has been working very hard to restore and maintain it.
In the property itself, there's a barn which I spent about 3 years renovating. It needed painting, and I scraped it all down by hand myself. Took 3 years to scrape it, and it took 1 week to paint it. So when I finished that project, I was thinking, what else do I have to do? And I remembered that the property on the north side of Convent Road, which is owned by the Catholic Church, Mercy First is what the property is called right now. There's a burial ground that was associated with this with the Skank family house. And it was desecrated, badly desecrated. I've been working with Zach Studenroth, Kurt Kahoffer, and Joel Snodgrass, who are dedicated to restoring old burial grounds to save this piece of property.
Yeah, let's rewind a little bit. When you first ventured out onto the burial ground property, that was about how long ago?
Probably 16, 17 years ago, Ron Berkeley, the previous owner, his father Raymond, who was a renowned school teacher at Hicksville High School, he was the chairman of the science department, bought the property in the 1940s, and Ron brought me some paperwork on the property, old surveys, etc., and he showed me this burial ground. So as I said, when I was finished, you know, working on the barn, and I went over there and started looking at it, I was just looking at a bunch of rocks busted up all over the ground, and it was just a shame to see, and I really didn't know what to do about it. A friend of mine in Sag Harbor, an artist named April Gornick, is very involved in Sag Harbor history, and she introduced me to Zach Studenroth, who is the head of this burial ground group, restoration of burial grounds, and I convinced Zach and Kurt to come over and look at it, and they said, this is the best kept secret on Long Island.
Yeah, the property, we were out there in the spring when Zach and Kurt actually began their part of the project. I don't know, had they been out there prior to that visit in the spring?
No, they'd never seen that property before. I'm sorry, they met with me around Christmas time, right, and took a look at it, and then they came back to begin work.
And I know you had done a lot of cleanup type work, you know, leaf raking and getting rid of limbs and things of that, to just to get the area a little bit more presentable before Zach and Kurt came out.
Absolutely, and in the course of doing that, I uncovered more stones that were, you know, just a little bit below the ground.
When they first came out to begin their work, I recall actually I was out that day with one of my colleagues as well. We took a lot of photos. We were interested in the project. And to our untrained eyes, it just looked like a jumble of stones. Zach and Kurt, within a few hours, had kind of organized things and identified a number of stones. At that point, approximately how many different burials had they identified?
That's a good question. It's even right now, it's hard to say how many are actually there. The first of the stones that were long given up for dead are standing again. Four of them we got up this week.
That was phase two of the project.
That was phase two of the project. And in doing that, we uncovered the very base of one of the main stones that we were going to stand, and in digging the top of the stone. So while neither one of those were cleaned yet, they will be cleaned, but everything has been pinned and epoxied back together, and it's standing.
The process was really actually fascinating when we were there watching them when they were first trying to organize things. They kind of gritted it out with stakes and lines, and then they were, with their trained eyes, consolidating the stones that they assumed went together. They kind of palletized everything and really put it into a condition where you could get a semblance of what was there. And I guess subsequent to that, phase two has been involved in getting some of the stones cleaned and now getting them back up.
Absolutely. And what's crazy is that we found Aaron Skenk's stones in three different parts of the burial ground. Somebody went in there and vandalized it, whether it was a Halloween thing or what have you, you know, kids just going crazy.
The property had been essentially unattended for decades.
Absolutely. And John Hammond, the Oyster Bay town historian, says that for abandoned cemeteries, the New York state law requires that the nearest municipality must maintain it twice a year, which is basically mowing, clearing, brush, etc. So John says that's the only responsibility that the town had. People who work at Mercy First believe that the property was given to the town of Oyster Bay in the 1890s in exchange for the construction of Convent Road. There's a pond on my property and the church's property that was an old 1890 maps. It's called Skenk Pond. In the 60s and 70s, it was known as Berkeley Pond. That road stopped there. Right. That was continued all the way down. And so I'm told, in exchange for the road, the town of Oyster Bay would take care of the burial ground. I have no proof one way or the other, just anecdotal.
Right.
So it's what it is.
But the extent of the town's involvement over the years has been really to cut the lawn a couple of times a year and do a basic cleanup. But other than that, the property was essentially unattended.
Right. So,
and it then falls upon citizens like you, who have a sense of the history and a desire to restore it, and that's where we are now.
So in the 1940s, Raymond Berkeley wrote a handwritten letter, and at the very end of it, he detailed the burial ground, and he said there were about 100 graves. We have a 1912 survey that was published by Josephine Frost, I believe is what her name was. She transcribed the field notes of a guy named William Wyckoff. Wyckoff is a famous name in Brooklyn and Long Island, and Wyckoff walked every cemetery on Long Island and wrote down the inscriptions on every headstone. So we had that, but that only covers about 50 names. And then we found a 1962 survey that that had about half that, around 24, 25. So again, I can't tell you how many are there. I tried to do a count this morning, and with broken pieces and footstones and headstones, I'm guessing maybe 30 are visible right now.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this project is, aside from the physical work of reorganizing and regrouping and trying to restore the stones, was all the background work that had to be done and the research to try to figure out who's where, who owns what portion of the property, how it came to be where it was. And that is just, you must have spent countless hours working on all of that.
I went to every library, every resource, and the best was Cicely Dyer, the reference library at the Brooklyn Historical Society, who actually found the original field studies of Wyckoff and was able to get us that information. So we're looking at two or three different surveys as well as what's on the ground to try to make a determination of what goes where and how many people were buried there.
Zach and Kurt have been doing this for a while. I know that they've worked on a number of cemeteries out in the East End. I think this, I think they mentioned this might have been the furthest west that they've been.
I can't answer that. You know, they'll tell you when they see you for a later meeting.
In fact, we'll do a little bit of a plug. We actually have a program coming up with Zach and Kurt. They're going to be out here on the 16th of January to discuss this particular project as well as their overall strategy in restoring these old old family burial grounds. Hope that you'll be able to join us as well and piece in some of your input. But we're looking forward to having them come out for that.
These guys are great. They really are, and they've been very fair on costs, and they know I'm paying for this, and they haven't. As I said, they've been very, very fair on what they're doing. So the first step was to gather all the stones and lay them on pallets.
Which is what Zach and Kurt did back in the spring.
Right, and then they cleaned them all. And then we were waiting for three dry days in a row, which didn't happen in the spring. Didn't happen until early summer, where they were able to put a chemical on the stones, and that chemical has helped bring out the writing. So you can read the transcriptions, the script on these things. It's fascinating. And this burial ground is the only record of these people who lived here, and they lived in my house. So I feel a certain bond to the Skank family, just because of this.
Well, if any of their spirits are still hanging around in the house, they'll be looking kindly on you.
They're smiling. Included in the burial ground are three graves of people who served in the American Revolutionary War with George Washington.
Wow.
So it's very special on lots of different levels, and to connect with American history like that and Oyster Bay town history, it's special to me.
It was interesting when I was there. I was talking to Kurt and Zach when we were out at the site this past spring, and a number of the stones are what you would typically expect to see, you know, a headstone with carving on it. But they're also in one section of the burial ground. It looked to be almost random, just stones with no markings, just actual, you know, rocks that you would find in your garden. And my, again, untrained eye said, oh, these, I guess you guys have to move and get rid of. He said, no. And what they explained to me was those typically would be markers for not family members, but perhaps servants or employees of the family who were in good stead with the family, who passed away and were buried in the family burial ground, but who didn't merit the actual expense of a carved stone.
In fact, they might have been slaves as well.
Right.
And yes, these were people who were important to the family, but not important enough to have a standing stone or to be on the burial ground proper, but off to the side. Interestingly, there are stones here that aren't marble. They're fieldstone in the main burial ground, and actually one of the fieldstones was carved, which Zach and Kirk will tell you is very rare to see that. And the reason that they used fieldstones is they couldn't afford to buy marble.
Right. And it would have had to been brought in from wherever at
yeah.
the time.
Yeah.
Very expensive process.
It's really been fascinating, and, you know, because it was such a mumbo jumbo of broken everything, it was a depressing place. Once they started organizing everything, there was a peace that came over it. And to see stones standing, it just like restoring American history. It's the way it should be.
They were also discussing with me even the whole geography of the area, where the actual burial ground is kind of elevated on a hill. Your house, what now is, you would see from Convent Road, is kind of actually the back of what would have been the house at the time. So they indicated to me that this would be a typical location for a burial ground, kind of on a hill towards the rear of the property. And they said they looked around and this is where they would have put it, obviously, and it made a lot of sense from them.
Yeah, it's about 300 yards, I would say, and it is on a going up an incline all the way to the top of the hill, so it's very appropriate. There are two other Syosset burial grounds. The Cheshire Cemetery, which is Miller Road, Edward Lane, and Ira Road, and that records that I read had at least 100 graves. There are only three markers that are mm-hmm. left. And John Hammond discovered another Skank cemetery south of Jericho Turnpike at the corner of Jackson Avenue. I haven't seen that, and I don't know what's there. He indicated four markers. So the family burial ground, which started coming into fashion where they actually have family burial grounds, was in the around 1800.
Right.
But the people that we're dealing with were born in the 1700s. It's to go back that much in time is it's most special. And as I said,
John Hammond had actually published a summary of a lot of the old burial grounds within the town of Oyster Bay, and if anybody's interested, you can come take a look at that here at the library. We should also point out to people listening that the burial ground that we're talking about is really not publicly accessible right now. It's on private property, so if anybody has an inclination that they might want to visit, please hold off on that and speak to either Rav or get in touch with me at the library, and we'll tell you how to go about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, because it is on church property, but it is maintained by the town of Oyster Bay, and it's obviously Catholic church property with a Dutch Reform cemetery being restored by me, a Jew.
Mm-hmm. If the public want to help you get involved in this project, what could they do?
The most pressing need right now there are two 65 to 70 foot trees, cherry trees, that were allowed to grow in the cemetery, and they have to be removed for no other reason than dead limbs, when they fall, will bust the stones that we've stood up again.
Right.
So I need a tree experts who can actually bring down these trees from the top without disturbing anything that's under it. I spoke to one tree guy and he said, I won't even touch it because it's a cemetery. And for me, I spent a week with a sawzall, thanks to you, Barney, recommending that, to actually cut out the stump. Digging, cutting roots, digging, you know, 100 roots in one of these things,
yeah.
And pulled out 100 pounds of wood, and then filled it in with with soil, and before when I'm finished, when we're finished with phase two, we're going to take soil, the actual soil, and level everything off.
Again, if anybody in our audience thinks that they might be in a position to provide any kind of help or would be interested, get in touch with me, Barney Leventino, here at the library, and then I will get you in touch with Rav. But give me a call here at the library, and we'll see if we can get some more help for Rav on this really, really important and worthwhile project. Have you guys identified any current survivors of the Skenk family?
John Hammond told me that in Ohio, Mary Skenk's, I don't know, fifth or sixth generation away, great-great-great-great-I-don't-know-how-many-greats-grandmother mm-hmm. Is buried there, and he wants to come and look at the stones. So there are, Skenk is a well-known name. I mean, I remember the Skenk Bus Company when I was a kid, and then out in East Hampton, the Skenk Fuel Delivery. It's a big family, but actual relatives do exist, and it'd be great to hook up with them, somewhere moving forward. Living in this house has been absolutely incredible. It's like living here 300 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Only I've got every place to shop. I've got the Long Island Railroad, the Long Island Expressway, Manhattan, so close. And yet, it's like being in a park. It's hard to explain how serene that piece of property is. Believe it or not, deer running around it, fox, some of the most incredible waterfowl you've ever seen. It just wood ducks. The place is beautiful.
You have the best of both worlds. You have a beautiful,
indeed,
serene location and close to everything you need.
But I have to put sticks in the windows to hold them up.
You can't have everything.
You can't have everything, but I don't think I'd have it any other way. I can't tell you, Barney, how fortunate I am to be in this house. And I never thought like that when we first got it. It was just, I had a business in Watermill. We had to move to a place that was closer to the city, near a doctor's. My wife has had a series of illnesses, etc. She's doing fine. I've just head over heels in love with this place.
That's wonderful. And again, it fell into the hands of the right kind of person, because there are a lot of people out there who would have bought the property and said, we got to get rid of this old house and build a modern structure here. And thankfully, you recognize the value and the importance of that property to our community. And so on behalf of the community, I thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome. And getting it on the National Register of Historic Places was great, because Raymond Berkeley tried to get it on the register, but he altered the house when he did the renovations, and the state said doesn't qualify anymore because you changed it.
Right.
50 years later, it becomes historic.
His alterations.
His alterations
now are historic.
Right. So. And Jim Warren, who heads New York State Parks and Recreation, these old houses and old structures, we had been in contact with him several times, and he said, I'm not looking at the house because it's already been rejected. Ironically, Camp Hero out in Montauk is a property that I've worked on for many years, saving from development, mm-hmm. and was very successful in that regard. And then the state wanted to put in a golf course there, and we fought that. And there's an old World War II fort. And it was finally, the state finally agreed to make it a park. And recognize the old history, and Jim Warren was there, and my wife says, that's the guy we've been contacting. So I said, go talk to him. So she did, and convinced him to come and look at the house, and he fell in love with it.
That's good.
He spent the day there, photographing everything. There's a tree on that property that we found in 1800 photographs when the Mann family owned it, and that tree was enormous then. It's 20 years ago, we measured the base of the tree at 25 feet around.
Wow.
Yeah, it's an old black walnut.
It might be one of the oldest trees in town.
It is, and certainly the house is. And right. Right now, I feel like I'm one of the oldest people.
Well, what's the next step out there?
Next week, we'll be beginning of November, we're going to finish phase two, which is standing another 13 stones approximately. And then what isn't identified will be placed in the barn. And I will then begin a search of the burial ground for other stones using probes, et cetera. There's even ground-penetrating radar, mm-hmm. believe it or not, that's used to find old crypts. But its potential is there for it to uncover stones. And I'll investigate that, and hopefully there'll be a phase three where we can uncover many more of what's you know been lost underground in this burial ground. Interestingly, burial ground versus cemetery. The old burial grounds, they had headstones and footstones, and the people were buried facing east. And in cemeteries, the people were just put in every which way. So that was the demarcation point for these things.
And this one's a little nicely organized as a burial ground.
Yeah, the very front row, I'm looking at it today, I see two markers, and I realize that was the front row. There must have been 10 or 15 markers there.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a lot more to do, which would be in phase three, but I can't tell you how gratifying it is to get this far.
Well, I'm hoping that, as I said, if we get the word out to the public, that we might be able to find some people that can pitch in and help with the project. Obviously, this is not, we don't want people running in there looking for things. We want to do this in an organized way. So, as I said, get in touch with us here at the library, and we'll see if we can get you on board with helping with Rav with this project. Are there any plans down the road to enclose the burial ground, fence it in? I don't know what the arrangement would be with the church.
Right now, what we're focused on is standing the stones, and mm-hmm. we've made giant strides since Christmas time to restore this and save the site. As we go forward, the potential is there to do something like that, put a split rail fence around it or a snake rail or stones or something like that. But that's up in the air right now. If I live long enough, hopefully I could do that.
I'm sure you will.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to the Grand Canyon on an 8-day hike. I fly out November 10th. I've been training for 3 months, yet it's, you know, people die in that place having their picture taken. So you never know.
Be careful.
I'll do my best.
Be careful and see us when you get back. Rav, thank you so much for coming in and speaking to us about the project. Again, for our audience, we'll be having a program here on January 16th where you can learn a whole lot more about this particular project and about cemetery and burial ground restoration in general with two of Long Island's leading foremost experts on the subject. So we invite you to that. And Rav, thank you so much for joining us. And with that, I will close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.